Welcome back into the show. My name is Carrington Harrison. Very happy to be here with you. Rob is here as well. You are listening on 96.5 The Fan, 96.5thefan.com, also the Odyssey app. Coming up in just a bit, I will go through how many players that I think can actually win the NFL MVP. Rob, let's also do something a little bit different in this 4 o'clock hour. Let's do contender or pretender, but let's do a college football edition of contender or pretender. I think we know that Texas is legit, Georgia, those kind of teams, but there's some fringe college football playoff teams. Let's go through those coming up in the 4 o'clock hour. All right, let me give you guys some stats really quickly on DeAndre Hopkins. I'll look this up. You know I'm really big on snap counts. D-Hop was in for 32% of their offensive plays on Sunday. D-Hop ran 14 routes on Sunday, and they also threw it to him 3 times, and he got 2 catches. So if you want to find a very obvious place that there is room for growth in this offense, I think that's where it is. I'm not really sure where else it is aside from guys just simply getting healthy. You getting Hollywood Brown back at some point later in the year, the return of Isaiah Pacheco to kind of open things up a little bit. But I think what you've seen from Kareem Hunt is this is what he is. Now, Travis can be better over the course of the next couple of days than he was in the first 3-4 games. A lot of that is targets and opportunity, and the offense certainly has a better flow of getting him the ball where he can contribute and actually help this team. But if you are looking at one very obvious place in the second half of where improvement is going to happen and where they're going to be drastically different a month from now than they are today, it's with DeAndre Hopkins, 33% of the offensive snaps. I would imagine that you are going to see a pretty incremental growth over these next 2 games, and they're kind of waiting for the Buffalo game, I think, to use D-Hop in his full potential. If the Chiefs go on the road and beat Buffalo coming up in a couple of weeks, I know we're a little bit past this conversation, but we can have it now if you want to. It's going to be really difficult for anybody else to be the one seed in the AFC. Like, this team has an opportunity to have the one seed kind of locked up by Thanksgiving if they really want to. You already have a 4-game lead over Baltimore. You play Buffalo coming up in a couple of weeks. You play Houston at the end of the season, but Houston's number one wide receiver is hurt right now, and their number two wide receiver is hurt as well. And I just don't see Houston as a team that's going to go 13-4 this year. I think they're going to go 11-6 and win their division and be a 2 or 3 seed in the AFC playoffs. I just don't see Houston being the one seed in the playoffs. You have already eliminated one of your contending teams in terms of being the one seed. You got a chance to eliminate the Buffalo Bills by the time you have your first bite of turkey. So if you were looking at where this team is going to be different over the course of the next month or so, I think, Rob, it is very, very obvious. It's very, very clear. It is in their usage of D-Hop, how they get him acclimated into the offense, how his role expands, and can you get him ready for a pretty significant game against Buffalo where you could potentially take a 3 or 4 game lead over Buffalo if you beat them coming up in a couple of weeks.
I think maybe the other way to say this in semantics is the involvement and growth of D-Hop, I think, does another thing for this offense. It's going to push them back toward pass first, and they will become a more effective passing team. They are 7-0 and everything's great, but right now, they are Marty Schottenheimer. They are ground and pound. They are 3 yards, cloud of dust, 4 yards, cloud of dust, 4 yards, cloud of dust, first down. That is how their offense operates at its highest efficiency. It's Kareem Hunt being a bowling ball. Go in there and get us the tough yards and keep us ahead of the sticks. And there is absolutely nothing wrong with that. But I don't think at its core, how the offense is built with Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid is to be, hey, we're going to be great because we are running the football. DeAndre Hopkins' growth and involvement is important because I think it gets the Chiefs back to being an explosive offense, because when you have the most talented quarterback on the planet and probably the best coach on the planet, when you combine those factors, they should be, you know, compiling explosive plays in big chunks. Those big chunks tend to come through the passing game. And right now, they don't really have those big chunks. they're not zero, but they are fewer and far between. If DeAndre Hopkins' growth happens the way we think, there's a trickle-down effect because now the explosive plays are back in the playbook, or they are there for the taking, and everything gets better because the Chiefs are then getting back to what they are at their core, which is a West Coast passing offense.
Yeah, I don't know if the explosive plays are maybe coming in that way. I would say that the explosive plays that you are talking about, I think you get there by Xavier Worthy's continued development. And maybe we are saying the same thing, that once you get D-Hop kind of acclimated into this offense and he kind of operates underneath, and you've also got Travis Kelce, you can take one or two more big shots down the field, and you are hoping that that's what you get. But I think we know, like, who are their big play down the field options? So if you were talking about explosiveness in the passing game, that's just not how they use Mecole Hardman. They don't use Mecole Hardman as that down the field threat. I also don't think that's what Justin Watson is on this team. There's just not a lot of guys that you think kind of fit that who's going to take the top off the defense. There's only one guy they have on their team, and that's Xavier Worthy. That comes with more time, more development, getting better on the same page with him and Patrick Mahomes. I think we see at times there's just a miscommunication there that makes sense. This guy's in the first 2 months of his career, but I don't really know if D-Hop at this point, with he's not creating a lot of separations, he's also just not really running past people anymore. How are you going to create those big plays? How are you going to create that explosiveness? I think it gets from more trust between Patrick Mahomes and Xavier Worthy, because I think he's the only guy in this offense that's really capable of having that explosiveness at this stage in his career.
And I guess it's probably semantics, because I would say an explosive play is 15+. And maybe DeAndre Hopkins getting more growth and being more than just it's 3rd and 6, run to the sticks and give me a first down guy, opens up more for Travis Kelce. It does open up more explosive opportunities for Xavier Worthy. I know we don't look at him this way, but Justin Watson, his career, has been a downfield threat. I remember that Charger game, his first year, he went right down the field in a one-on-one and won, and big play for a touchdown. I think there is a trickle-down effect. Mitch Holt is on the show Monday, and he said what he saw from Hopkins isn't Hopkins-specific, but what he saw from Hopkins is the other stuff. Kelce had one of his best games of the season. You saw them targeting Worthy more and more and more. Now, it was a lot of drag routes and curls, but they did see a higher volume to their explosive weaponry. I think if that continues, and they got the long week to get ready for it, I think Hopkins' growth has a trickle-down effect, and it creates more opportunities for other players to make those downfield explosive type of plays. Because right now, 4-yard pass to Kelce, 3-yard run by Hunt, 4-yard pass to Hopkins is working, and that's great, but it is not a sustainable model. You have to have some level of explosion in your offense.
Yeah, no, they certainly need to add it at some point. I think we see where they will. I was going to ask you a toss-up question, but I think I already know your answer. Who do you think this offense could use more? Do you think it's Isaiah Pacheco, or do you think it's Hollywood Brown?
I think it's Hollywood Brown.
Yeah, I actually think it's Isaiah Pacheco. I think Kareem Hunt has been fine for what he is. He's averaging 3.7 yards per carry, and that is a yard different than Isaiah Pacheco. I think getting Isaiah Pacheco back gives you a 4.6, 4.7. And I also think that Pacheco is just better at catching the ball out of the backfield than what Kareem Hunt is. I think Kareem Hunt is a backup running back that they are having to use way more than they should, just based out of the circumstances. That if you were telling me that you could get that same tough and you can take some of those miles off Isaiah Pacheco down the stretch, and you can use them more as the yin and yang, I think you would start to get a little bit more out of Kareem Hunt even than what you've gotten so far this year. Now, I'm with you on Hollywood Brown. Adding Hollywood Brown back, having a viable pass-catching option would be a huge benefit to this team. I actually think it's kind of noticeable now over time that I think some of the newness has worn off. You remember, early on in Kareem Hunt, people were arguing that he was better than Isaiah Pacheco. He's not. There is no stat, there is no metric that you can show me that would suggest that Kareem Hunt is a better running back in 2024 than Isaiah Pacheco. They are noticeably worse at running back than they were the first 4 weeks of the season or last season. And I think getting back to that level of explosiveness could open things up for the rest of the offense as well.
I think the answer is, honestly, if I really were to think about it, it's a tie. Like, I think they need both, because right now Xavier Worthy is only their downfield threat, and their offense is worse, but their running game is worse. I think some of the allure or some of the scheme or some of the whatever is definitely off Kareem Hunt. I remember I pointed this out 2 weeks ago, and the text line called me a hater. I said, guys, it's worth noting his yards per game is per carry every game is getting worse and worse and worse, which is what happens when you're a 30-year-old running back in the NFL. You can burst onto the scene and have a great game, but eventually the wear and tear your body has, especially with the usage, has worn him down, and you can see it noticeably. Kareem Hunt slowing down. Like,
I actually don't think that's it as much.
His yards per carry is going down every game.
Yeah,
noticeably down. Not from like, it was not like Jamal Charles, 5.8 to suddenly 2.1. It's been a steadily gradual decrease.
I think what it is with Isaiah Pacheco, there is always the possibility of a big run, right? There is a chance that Isaiah Pacheco runs somebody over or runs past somebody that you can take that 2nd and 4 and you can turn it into 1st and 10 because he had a 17-yard run and he gets up and he's all fired up. If you give the ball to Kareem Hunt on 2nd and 4, it is very, very possible he gets a 1st down on that play. He's also probably not getting 9 yards on that carry either, or getting 11 yards on that carry. He might get you 5 or 6 and move the chains. And again, I'm not negative on Kareem Hunt at all. I think he has served the absolute purpose of what they are. But you mentioned the explosiveness in the pass game. That is certainly missing. They also don't have explosives right now in the run game as well. And that's what Isaiah Pacheco was. He is explosive. Whether it is you give it to him on a 2nd and 1 and he's going to rumble pass for 8 yards. He was getting those tough yards too. He's just a younger version of what Kareem Hunt is. Coming up in a little bit, we can keep this conversation going off about the Chiefs offense. Let's also play Contender or Pretender, a college football edition. There are, I would say, about 5 to 6 teams that are on the fringe of the college football playoff. Are you a believer in these schools? That's coming up. Keep right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison.
This man was a bona fide scrub.
On 96.5 The Fan, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
We were talking about the run game for the Kansas City Chiefs, and I'm very hopeful, optimistic that they're going to get Isaiah Pacheco back sooner rather than later. There was a little bit of update on Isaiah Pacheco that he is back to running on the treadmill. So I think we are talking about Isaiah Pacheco coming back in probably the next 2 to 4 weeks. I think you're sort of looking at the Chiefs schedule and trying to find a target date of what could be realistic for him to come back. I feel pretty confident in saying that he will be back at least by the Black Friday game. If you could get Isaiah Pacheco back for the game against Buffalo, so that is 18 days from today. So they have the game against Tampa Bay. They then play Denver on the 10th, and then they play the Buffalo Bills on the 17th. I think it's a realistic possibility that you could have Isaiah Pacheco back by the Buffalo game. Maybe that's a little bit optimistic, but the fact that he has not had any complications, the fact that he is already running and he doesn't have a boot on anymore, you would think that this is trending in a very positive direction. Someone on the text line says, C-Dot, do you think Isaiah Pacheco is going to be the same when he comes back? It's a leg injury. Yeah, that's just kind of football, though. I don't have any worry about Isaiah Pacheco when he gets back as long as he is fully healthy. We're talking about a guy that just played earlier this season and is still a 25-year-old running back. So I don't have too much worry about Isaiah Pacheco. If he comes back, he is fully healthy and medically cleared to go out there and play. I think you will see the exact same Isaiah Pacheco. You talked about explosiveness in the pass game. I think they also could just use the explosiveness back in the run game. I looked this up during the commercial break. So Kareem Hunt, he has exactly 50 more carries than Isaiah Pacheco has on the season. They both have the same number of runs that have gone for over 10 yards with 2 this season. So one player is getting an insane amount of usage in comparison to other players in the league. So I looked this up during the break as well. The only players in the NFL right now that have a higher average in terms of touches, because he's just not going to have the same amount of touches as Joe Mixon, who has played in more games, or Saquon Barkley, who has played in more games, etc. The only two running backs with a higher level of usage since he has joined has been Joe Mixon and Kyren Williams. I just don't think that's who Kareem Hunt is now. So I think the Chiefs are going to be helped out on both ends of it. You get back the more productive back in Isaiah Pacheco. And now if you were telling me that for the 4 to 6 carries that they are giving Carson Steele or giving Samaje Perine, you were now going to give those carries to Kareem Hunt, I think you'll see a better, fresher version of Kareem Hunt as this team gets into the cold months as well. I think Isaiah Pacheco coming back is just going to It is going to make this offense more well-rounded and more complete because of his explosiveness, and I think you will then put Kareem Hunt back in his proper role of being a great backup singer. Like, they're asking him to sing lead for the band right now. I think he's doing a good job given the situation. I just don't think he's that back anymore that if you put him back in his proper usage and he's getting the ball 6 to 10 times a game and you're using him in some different and creative ways and you're using him as that short yardage back to take some of the wear and tear off Isaiah Pacheco, they can have a really deadly 1-2 punch.
I think the harsh reality, and maybe harsh is an unfair term, the reality of the situation is what Kareem Hunt is this point in time in his career is Mike Allstott. He is, hey, we need you to get, it's 3rd and 2. Get us 3. He's going to get you 3 100%. Yards every time. Like, that's why he's a great goal line back. That's why he's great on 3rd downs. That's why he's great on 4th downs. There is absolutely nothing wrong with saying running back Kareem Hunt, we need 3 yards. Go get it for us. He does that. The problem is, and this is why I make the Mike Allstott comparison, you were never handing the ball to Mike Allstott and being like, man, we're about to break one off for 22 yards here. You're not getting that from Kareem Hunt. That 10 yards rushing stat is jarring. Isaiah Pacheco and Kareem Hunt have the same amount of 10-yard-plus runs right now. Kareem Hunt's been the starter for 5 weeks. He's played more games this year than Isaiah Pacheco.
I mean, right now, Kareem Hunt has 50 more carries than Isaiah Pacheco. Isaiah Pacheco has 34 carries on the season, and Kareem Hunt has 84 carries so far this season, and they both have the same number of 10-yard runs. One player just gives you a chance at just more explosiveness than what I think Kareem Hunt gets you. So I'm still very, very high on Kareem Hunt. I think he has been a perfect complement to what the Chiefs are. I also think someone asked, why are they running it so much? I still think he's one of their better options in the face of everything. If you were telling me that the plan is to give the ball more to, you pick their wide receiver, I trust Kareem Hunt more than I trust Justin Watson. I trust Kareem Hunt more than I trust Mecole Hardman. I trust Kareem Hunt more than I trust Xavier Worthy and the touches and the opportunity. So I think he is getting the ball so much is because he's still one of their better options.
I mean, I get your point. He is still one of their better options. But I hope, and we talked about this earlier, I hope with the inclusion of Hopkins into the offense, they get away from that run-first mentality, which, by the way, is not just me disliking that. There has been no point in Andy Reid's career other than this season where that is how they operate. Even when they were running out Coy Detmer in Philadelphia, they were 60-40 pass.
I would argue last year they operated that way.
They still were 60-40 pass.
No, you're right, but, and we don't talk about this enough, do you know who led the team in yards per scrimmage last year?
I mean, that's always going to be a running back, but yes.
Not on this team. It has not always been their running back on this team. It usually was their wide receiver. It usually was their tight end. Last year, the Chiefs player who had the most yards from scrimmage was a running back, which I'm guessing that is the first time that has happened during the Andy Reid era. This is who they've turned into over the last eight weeks. This is who they've been. This is an extension of who they were last year in the postseason. We talked about this yesterday. The Chiefs, the version that is playing right now is not any different than the one that played in the postseason. It is not any different. The one that went on the road and beat Buffalo, this is the same version of the Chiefs. The same version that beat the Baltimore Ravens. The same version that beat the San Francisco 49ers. They have just honed in on what we are. Let's make sure that we give our running back 20 to 25 carries. Let's be balanced here and let's try to limit mistakes on the outside. That's all they've been for the last, basically over this winning streak.
They are that right now. But I would say the last 2 years are the outliers and not the trend. I still think Andy Reid at his core wants to get back to what he has been every other season in his NFL career. I think what you just described and their running back being their primary weapon is a product of they've been forced to do that more than they want to do that. It is, we got backed into a corner. Last year in the postseason, if they had run the same offense they were running in week 11 against the Bengals and against the Raiders, they would have gotten beat. So they just said, no, we're not going to get beat. We're going to change it up. This year, I think the plan was to get back to regular, but all the injuries have piled up, and now out of necessity, they have gone back to that postseason plan. But I think as they begin to get more healthy and add more weapons, they want to get away from that plan because it was a product of necessity, not what they want to do.
Coming up in a little bit, Rob, I do want to go through some of the contenders and pretenders in college football as we get closer and closer to the playoffs. Let's talk about this for just a little bit as we are getting closer to the MVP conversation and who you think it's going to be. Now, Rob, you know that I don't think that the MVP always has to be a quarterback. Last year, I would have voted for Christian McCaffrey. I said that almost every week on this show. That's who I would have voted for to win NFL MVP. I don't think this year that there is a non-quarterback that would fit the criteria. I don't think that Derrick Henry fits it. Like, I don't think Derrick Henry is the MVP of this season. There's not a Tyreek Hill year where a wide receiver has just been so phenomenal. I think TJ Watt has been incredible. It has not been a defensive player that has been so good this season that you need to include him into the MVP conversation. So this is the top five right now for MVP. Josh Allen is number one. Lamar is tied for number one as well. Patrick Mahomes is third at plus 600. Jared Goff at plus 1800. Jalen Hurts at plus 1500. Those are the top five. I understand why Mahomes is in the top three. Patrick Mahomes has not played like the NFL MVP. We've seen the 2 years that he has won the award. I don't think he has played like the MVP. So I understand why Vegas and the book just doesn't want everybody betting on Mahomes to win MVP. I don't think he has been the MVP so far this season. I think through the first half of the season, I think that Josh Allen has been the MVP. I think Jaden Daniels is second. And I would probably put Lamar Jackson at third. But at this point, what does winning MVP matter for the Baltimore Ravens? He's won it two times before, and they haven't made it to the Super Bowl. And somehow, at least in my mind, that kind of knocks Lamar Jackson. Like, we're going to give this guy the award again for MVP. But I would have him at third. That's how I would have it today. I would have Josh Allen one, Jaden Daniels two, Lamar Jackson as we are through the halfway point of the NFL season.
The absolute disrespect coming out of that room for Jared Goff is just impressive. You don't have him in your top three? Jared Goff, not in the top three. It's fine if you don't have him as the favorite. Me and you have argued about this. I have no problem with Josh Allen as
the
favorite.
He's been great
right
this
now.
Year. I can't deny that.
Josh Allen's been sensational. I have no argument. I'm with Josh Allen. Jared Goff is number two. Jared Goff leads the NFL in completion percentage. He has a 71% completion percentage in the NFL, Carrington. He also is what? Top five in touchdowns thrown this year. He has four total picks. Jared Goff has been really impressive on the second best team in the NFL, the best team in the NFC, and they are boat racing people over there in Detroit. And we both know, as much as it's stats and driven and all those things, there's a narrative to it too. He doesn't throw incompletions and they're killing people. Jared Goff has got to be in your top three, ahead of Lamar Jackson, no less. Lamar Jackson, what he would have to do to win the MVP is Herculean because he already has the award. There is no world where Lamar Jackson is ahead of him in an MVP hierarchy power ranking. Jared Goff has to be in that top three.
All right, let me ask you this. Is there a world in which you would vote for Jaden Daniels to win MVP? Because I don't know if Jaden Daniels is going to have the traditional sort of MVP numbers. Like, he is not going to have one of those just monster seasons. We have seen Mahomes have two monster seasons in which he won NFL MVP. Lamar Jackson's first year thought he had monster numbers to win MVP. If you were looking at the pace right now, as we are at the halfway point, the Commanders have played eight games and they are now entering their bye week, I believe. Jaden Daniels is on pace to throw for 15 touchdown passes. Now, he is on pace to complete 70% of his passes. He is on pace to have 3,700 passing yards and almost 1,000 rushing yards. Do you think that's enough for a rookie to win MVP? If he finishes the year with 3,600 passing yards, he runs for 1,000 yards, he has 25 combined touchdown passes, and the Commanders are the two seed in the NFC. Do you think that's enough for a rookie to win NFL MVP?
The numbers would be yes, I would say so, but I think they already have an award for that level of season. He's going to win the Rookie of the Year. I think a Rookie of the Year, and this is unfair, by the way. I'm not saying this is the way the world should work. This is the way the world does work. The level he has to play at a rookie is just remarkable to, as a rookie, win the award. So the numbers you laid out, I think, are MVP good, but he's held to a different standard because he's already going to use those stats to win Offensive Rookie of the Year. So I think the stats you laid out are a yes, but I do not believe he will win it even with those stats, if that makes sense.
I will say, to your point about Jared Goff, if there is a player who has the ability to go out and win the award, I think it's Jared Goff. I just don't think that Patrick Mahomes is going to have the numbers to win the award this year. I think the Chiefs are going to be the one seed in the AFC. I believe that Mahomes is the best quarterback in the league. I mean, we're at the midway point of the season. He has 8 touchdowns and 9 interceptions. I just don't think that he is, from a number standpoint, going to turn things around where at the end you say Mahomes has been the most valuable player in the league. I do think with Jared Goff, the numbers are certainly there. I mean, he has 13 touchdown passes, 4 interceptions, and you're right, he leads the NFL in completion percentage. I think the biggest thing for Jared Goff is they got a lot of big games that we are now going to be paying attention to, that if you want to sort of sway the conversation in your favor, I mean, this is how you do it. They have the Fox 325 game this week. They play the Packers in their division. Next week, they play Sunday Night Football on the road against Houston. They play on Thanksgiving. Everybody watches on Thanksgiving. They have a 325 game in December against Buffalo, the Nansen Romo game. They play Monday Night Football against San Francisco later in this year. Jared Goff, I would say, more than any other quarterback, and I guess you would put Josh Allen in that conversation as well, Goff has more opportunities than anybody else to go out and win the award. Is he going to go take the award and Jared Goff is going to be the MVP of the NFL? I also think the league kind of wants to give it to somebody new. Mahomes has won it twice already. Lamar Jackson has won it twice already. And then everybody else has yet to win their first award. Jared Goff's been to a Super Bowl, hasn't won the award. Josh Allen hasn't won the award yet. So there's a couple of different guys who have never won NFL MVP. Even in the middle of the Brady runs, you got a Cam Newton MVP. You got a Matt Ryan MVP. You got one of those quote-unquote random MVP years. This could be one of those with Jared Goff that he puts together a good year and he ends up winning NFL MVP.
So two quick things. One, outside of the Vegas betting odds, are there actual people who believe Patrick Mahomes should be the favorite for MVP? Because I know that's what Vegas says, but I agree with you. I think it's because the book doesn't want to be out over its skis and have the most talented quarterback have long odds and something crazy happens. But even the text line, which is the most see-through Chiefs glasses entity maybe on earth, there is no real person who is saying Patrick Mahomes for this season should be the MVP, correct? Like, that's like arguing against air. That doesn't exist. It's like that meme on Twitter. There's always one guy saying Steph Curry can't make three. No one believes this year is a MVP season for Mahomes, right? It's just the book protecting themselves.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I also think, and I don't want to speak for all Chiefs fans here, this is maybe just me projecting, I don't think Chiefs fans care about this stuff anymore. There was a time where I think Chiefs fans really cared about this stuff. Patrick Mahomes' first year, you remember when at the end of the season they were arguing for Drew Brees to win MVP. I'm like, wait, hold on. Like, it's obvious who the MVP is. It's the quarterback of the Chiefs. After the year that Tyreek was gone and Mahomes was putting up those big numbers, I think there was sort of a push. But when you were in the middle of a three-peat, I just don't think Chiefs fans are moved anymore by the conversation on if their guy is being slighted or not slighted. Like, the numbers aren't there, and the Chiefs just obviously are looking for a much greater prize. This just goes to our conversation that Chiefs fans have just turned into NBA fans. Like, the regular season is cool, and sure, you'll watch it and you'll keep up with it, but it is far more about the postseason and how your team is positioned and those 3 or 4 games potentially at the end of the season. So I think we have just reached at least this point with Mahomes that I just don't think fans care whether or not he wins the MVP or not. He's going to be the quarterback of the best team. They're going to be the one seed. You're going to have to come through Kansas City, and I would take him over any of these quarterbacks in a game that really matters. Josh Allen has been incredible. Lamar has been incredible. Jared Goff is putting up big numbers. In a game on January 15th, I will take Patrick Mahomes against any of them. And as long as you feel that way about Mahomes, I just don't know if Chiefs fans care anymore about individual awards.
And I actually very much agree with that. I believe fans don't truly care. I think they cared in 2022 because it was obvious Mahomes was, and it was just nonsense on social media about who should beat Mahomes. Second thing, and it's another quick thing. You said we'll look back if Goff wins it as a random year for Jared Goff. Will we? What about Jared Goff's resume makes him look like a random person? He was a top two pick in the NFL draft. He went to a Super Bowl at his first stop. He's now played an NFC title game at his second stop. He is putting up MVP style of season this year. He could win it. We also don't know. He might end up with another Super Bowl appearance under his belt, or at least another NFC title appearance. I feel like Jared Goff is viewed as like some came out of nowhere Cinderella story. We'll look back at his tenure as, wow, that was random that he was good. Everything about his lineage, except for Sean McVay giving up on him, is a guy that we should believe can do these things. Top pick, former Super Bowl quarterback. Like, that lineage is not going to be looked at back at as random, is it?
Yeah, I guess more to me the random is we had 2 years, like this is how the NFL MVP conversation went. It went Peyton Manning, Aaron Rodgers, Cam Newton, and Matt Ryan won it, and then it went to Brady, Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, Aaron Rodgers. So maybe random is the wrong way of putting it. I just think if Jared Goff wins the award, we will look back, and then next year Patrick Mahomes will win it, and then Josh Allen wins it, and then Joe Burrow will win it, and we will point back like, oh yeah, I remember Jared Goff won NFL MVP. I mean, isn't he this generation's Matt Ryan? Like, 7 years from now, me and you are going to, they're going to fire us. And you know what our replacements are going to argue? They're going to argue that Jared Goff is a future Hall of Famer because he won MVP. The same way that people will argue that Matt Ryan should be in the NFL Hall of Fame because he won MVP that 1 year and his team lost in the Super Bowl. Doesn't that sound like the accomplishments of Jared Goff? Isn't that what Jared Goff has basically done so far in his career? They went to a Super Bowl, they lost, and you think he's going to win NFL MVP this year and they're the best team in the NFC. That sounds like the northern version of the Atlanta Falcons.
Can I ask you a question? Isn't the players laid out? Isn't that actually Joe Burrow? Because if Goff wins an MVP and goes back to a Super Bowl, his resume right then, like let's say the Lions win the Super Bowl, the best team in the NFC, let's just say they do. We'll take the MVP thing off the table. Isn't then what you're laying out Joe Burrow? Because at that point, Goff would have multiple Super Bowls, which Burrow wouldn't. They both were top two picks at quarterback in the NFL draft. It's a matter of accolades from there. Is it possible that random made the wrong term, that Matt Ryan season is what we look back and say, oh, that was Joe Burrow, who Matt Ryan was a top five pick in the NFL draft, Boston College, had all the lineage, won MVP, was in the playoffs, but is it possible Matt Ryan is Joe Burrow?
Hold this thought. I have a toss-up question to ask you coming up on the other side. I'll answer your question. It's also related to this. I want you to think about this. Right now, Patrick Mahomes is plus 600 to win MVP, and Andy Reid is plus 650 to win Coach of the Year. Who is more likely to win the award? Is it Patrick Mahomes or is it Andy Reid, as they are both sitting at basically the same odds to win their award? I also think that Andy Reid not really being seriously considered also kind of showed you how broken the process is, and will also play contender or pretender for the college football playoff. Keep it right here, so Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5, The Fan, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
All right. I got a question to ask you guys. Patrick Mahomes right now is plus 600 to win NFL MVP. For those of you that are not the gambling type, he is currently third to win NFL MVP. Andy Reid is currently fifth to win Coach of the Year. He is at plus 650, so they have around the same percentage chance of winning. That would also tell you that it's more likely that Patrick Mahomes wins NFL MVP than it is for Andy Reid to win Coach of the Year. Is Andy Reid's only chance to win Coach of the Year is that the Chiefs have to go undefeated this year? And I understand that this is the spirit of the award, right? Your team was terrible. Nobody thought you were going to be good. You exceeded expectations, so we give you Coach of the Year. But, I mean, if you're the coach of the best team in the league and your team lost its starting running back, your team lost its number one wide receiver, your team lost its number two wide receiver, your team currently doesn't have its fourth wide receiver as well, your team's number two corner also got injured, its number three corner left the next game with the concussion. If there is any team that maybe, hey, you've done a really good coaching job, Wouldn't that person be Andy Reid? Let's say right now that you took a good coach. Let's say that you took Kevin Stefanski as the head coach of the Kansas City Chiefs. Are they currently undefeated? Like, if you swapped out Andy Reid and you traded him to Cleveland and you took Cleveland's coach, Kevin Stefanski, are the Chiefs right now currently 7-0?
No.
I don't think they're 7-0. I think they're 5-2, maybe 4-3 with a different head coach than what they currently have. So you were telling me that we think that there is a coach that potentially adds somewhere between 2 to 4 wins of value. And you're telling me that guy has no chance of winning coach of the year. The coach of the year, I think, has already been decided. It's really only two people that I think can win the award. It's either Dan Quinn, the head coach for the Washington Commanders, or it's the Vikings head coach, Kevin O'Connell. I don't really see a scenario in which Sean Payton wins coach of the year because I don't know if they're giving it to a coach whose team doesn't win its division. But if the Commanders win their division, their head coach is getting the award. There's nobody else even needs to show up that day. They have already decided. Or if the Vikings win their division and they got a chance to win that division, I don't think they are, but they have a chance to do it. I think that then Kevin O'Connell is going to be it. So we have just resigned to the fact that coach of the year, there's only one criteria for coach of the year. Your team has to be bad. Your team then exceeds expectations, so we gave it to you. It's not coach of the year then. It's turnaround of the year. Call something different. Turnaround of the year. So let's eliminate 24 teams. Your team is ineligible to win coach of the year. It is impossible because we thought your team was going to be good this year. So you got to be the coach of the Titans, the Commanders, the Panthers. Those are the only coaches that have a chance of winning the award. This is stupid.
Everything you're saying is correct. It's really dumb. It's really, really, really dumb. It's the same thing I get annoyed with about comeback player of the year. Like, last year's comeback player of the year was Joe Flacco when he came back from the devastating problem he had of being benched. Like, that's not the comeback player of the year. The award's broken. There's no way around it. It's a broken award. I mean, the only other way Andy Reid can win it, other than going undefeated or exceeding expectations, is, and I'm knocking on wood, Chiefs fans, I don't want this to happen. If it was, remember that year that Brady got hurt in the opener and Belichick still went 10-6? If that happened in Kansas City and they went 11-6, 12-5, made the playoffs, and they did it on the back of Carson Wentz, he'd be coach of the year that year because, oh, he lost his quarterback and still was good. But as long as Patrick Mahomes is his quarterback, I don't think he ever has a shot. And it's stupid. But that's just the way the world works.
Coming up at the top of the hour, I will tell you the 5 things that I've learned about the Kansas City Chiefs as we are wrapping up the first half of the season. So week 8 is over. We are heading towards week 9 and Thursday Night Football. I will tell you what I've learned most about the Chiefs over the first half of the season. All right, Rob, we got a little bit of time before we get to the hits. Let's have a little college football contender or pretender on who you think has a chance of going to the college football playoff.
Karen's not going to waste your time with teams we think are auto locks. Let's talk about the teams on the fringe. Contender or pretender for maybe your least favorite team outside of Kansas, the Tennessee Volunteers.
You know I don't like Tennessee.
You hate them so much.
Just don't like Tennessee. Let me pull up Tennessee's schedule really quickly here because you know I dislike Tennessee. No, Tennessee plays Georgia, no. I don't even need to look anymore at their schedule, no. They already got one loss. They beat Alabama. They lose at Georgia. All right, I'm now talking myself into it. I think the easier way to talk about the SEC is we're doing this on the fly. Georgia's going to make it. Texas is going to make it. Alabama is going to make the college football playoff.
Whoa, 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 whoa. You have Alabama as a lock? You have 2-loss Bama as a lock?
I mean, there's going to be a 2-loss team that makes – it's not just going to be 11 1-loss teams and then whatever team is the group of 5 school. So if you're telling me that Alabama is still in, I think Alabama's still got a very easy shot of making the college football playoff.
I know we're adjusting this on the fly. Let's run the numbers. Let's say the Big 12 has undefeated Iowa State versus undefeated BYU. You're going to hold out a conference title appearance team with 1 loss for Bama? Let's say the ACC, is Clemson against Miami. Let's say Miami loses. Now you have an ACC champion and Miami both have 1 loss. You're putting 2-loss Bama in over them? What do you do with Notre Dame? I think Bama's second loss disqualified them and up until a third SEC team gets that two-loss mark. If Tennessee beats Georgia or Texas loses to A&M or something happens, they re-enter the fold. But the way it currently sits, they are out.
Yeah, I don't know if Alabama is all the way out yet. They've already beat Georgia this year. They go on the road next weekend. They play LSU. If your losses now, they did lose to Vanderbilt on the road. They also lost to Tennessee, but there's going to be a two-loss team that gets in. So you're right. Tennessee would get in over Alabama because they beat them. I'm not 100% certain that Notre Dame is ahead of them. Who's Notre Dame beating this year? What's their wins? What's their schedule?
A&M.
They beat A&M in September, and then they have skated by the rest of the year where they didn't play anybody.
They still have Army on their schedule, which is weird to say, but Army still remains on their schedule. What do you do with A&M then? Because A&M was a team I had written down contender.
I would just like
pretender.
To point out, if we were saying is what good teams have you played and you're telling me they play Army, that says all I need to know about their schedule and where they currently are. You also think that there's a chance that the ACC and Big 12 both get two teams? I'm just saying, you think four teams are coming from those two leagues? Because I've always operated like three teams are coming from that league.
I also was going to put down, what do you do with Ohio State? If Ohio State loses this weekend, they're still probably in, but if you really you talk about Notre Dame's schedule, if Ohio State loses this weekend, look at their non-con.
No, it's weak. It's weak. their schedule is weak.
And we haven't even gotten it. Again, I had written this down. What do you do with Indiana? Indiana just keeps winning. They don't play Ohio State.
They play later in the year.
They don't play Oregon or Penn State then. Mm-hmm. So they could be a one-loss team that doesn't play in their conference title game. Like, it is going to be an absolute mess for the committee to sort out. So I think if you have two losses, you're kind of in trouble right now.
Yeah, I would say in your scenario, people might be mad at the outcome, but Indiana needs to beat Ohio State if they want to make the college football playoff.
So you think their only path is undefeated regular season?
No, I think their only path is they need to beat Ohio State in order to make it. Where I actually think, and maybe I'm being naive here, I don't know if the committee is going to be as fixated on how many losses that you have as we used to always be. Listen to the wins that Indiana has so far this year. Let's go through Big Ten wins. Maryland, Northwestern, Nebraska, Washington. So they have not played any good teams in the Big Ten so far. There's really good teams in the Big Ten. They haven't played any of them. They play Michigan State. They play Michigan, two bad college football teams, and then they play Ohio State. I just don't know if you can lose the one big game that you have. What would their best win be if they lose to Ohio State? Their best win is
Nebraska?
Nebraska? You aren't a playoff team then. I'm sorry, you're not a playoff team.
By the way, real quick, I know we're up against break. You know, if that plays out, I don't think you're wrong, then super conferences would have screwed Indiana because they didn't make their conference schedule. The non-con they can control a little bit. They didn't go tell the conference, don't give us Oregon. They got screwed by super conferences.
I would then say you need to schedule better. Their non-con games were Florida International, Western Illinois, and Charlotte. I'm sorry that the Big Ten schedule screwed you. You played a UMKC non-con schedule. Go accept the Holiday Bowl. You had a great season. You went 12-1. It was fun. This is a memorable year. You gave tribute to Lee Corso. But I'm sorry. You didn't play a playoff schedule. That has to be part of it. It can't just be, oh, well, we got lucky based on the schedule. We have no clue if Indiana is good or not because their best win is Maryland at home. Coming up on the other side, I'll tell you the five things I've learned about the Chiefs in the first half of the season. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your new home for Chiefs football.